everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we got hammered. I've been in town over 30 years, and I got to tell you, I put the hour of intensity with that storm from 11:45 to 12:45, one of the top 10 intense weather events, at least at my house, that I've experienced.
I think a lot of folks in the Tucson area got pelted pretty well last night.
Oh, big time. And I'm telling you, the National Weather Service is saying we may see something that hasn't happened in a long time, going back to 1998, and has really only happened 10 times since 1895, when they kind of started officially keeping weather records. And that will be, we may not get out of the 70s for our high temperature on Saturday. And that will be very unusual, obviously. But big storm still coming this way, right, Tom?
Yes, sir. And it's not just in Tucson. The Phoenix, Scottsdale area, Paradise Valley area got hit just as hard, if not harder, than we did last night. And the National Weather Service says more of the same coming over the next couple of days.
It's Friday. It's July 23rd, 2021. The radio station is 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk. The call letters, KVOI, like K Voice, The Voice. We're now pushing 11 full years on the radio. We have our worldwide live listening podcasts and show archive on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan Smith is with me in studio, so I can say face-to-face to him. Thanks, Dylan.
Well, you are very welcome, and thank you, sir.
Dylan,
and, it's good to see you doing, seemingly at least, you're maybe putting on a brave face, but a whole lot better.
Yeah, I'm doing a whole lot better. I kind of look at it like three periods of a hockey match. The first 4 weeks, I got my behind, really handed to me. Lost that period big time. I'd say maybe 4-1 if you were looking at goals. Second period was that 8-week period where we saw the x-ray, which looks pretty darn good. So I've evened the score, and now we're into, by 12 weeks, they say the bone will be pretty much remodeled and healed. The problem is now, you know, the PT is not real pleasant, but you got to get that moving. The arm's
You seem to be moving that arm around a little bit.
I'm trying to be in really good spirits. Slept on my right side for the first time since the accident, which was huge. So, anyway, thank you for asking. I might as well, while we're talking to Dylan, tell a little for our folks about him. He's editor, publisher, and founder of the 11-year-old online news service. Actually, you're in your 12th year.
I think so.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, do we count 2020? What happened there?
Yeah,
it's kind of like, you know, a little.
Anyway, the organization is TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan's president now of the Arizona Press Club, immediate past chair of Lion Publishers. That's an acronym for local independent online news publishers. Also want to say thanks to Green Valley News, Sahorita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group. They have a portfolio of publications, Tucson Weekly, Tucson Business, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. All right, the Friday Focus interview is with Tim Tomier. Tim is the interim assistant city manager. The interim, if we take a vote between Dylan and myself, we'll just say assistant city manager.
Yeah, right? Come on, Mike. Give the man the job.
Come on. It's been going on too long. Anyway, as the interim assistant city manager for the city of Tucson, listen to the hats that this guy oversees with his public works functions, include very important Tucson Water, Parks and Recreation, Environmental and General Services, Planning and Development Services, Transportation and Mobility, and Housing and Community Development. You do everything but, I guess, sweep the floors and then open the door at 8 a.m. and close it at 5.
Well,
Good afternoon.
And hey, Tim, how are you?
I'm doing well, and after hearing that list again, the interim sounds pretty good for now.
Hey, you know, after that big storm, I notice over at Reed Park, there's some huge trees that went down, not necessarily with the storm last night, but within the last few days.
That's certainly something we see pretty much this time of year, whether it's at the parks or in other along golf courses or other areas where these large trees have been able to develop. Sometimes they just can be overwhelmed by the rains and or the winds. And sometimes they also don't have a really solid root structure to kind of keep them anchored. So it's a loss and something that we contend with every time.
The drought situation, this very productive summer thunderstorm season, which really began 3 weeks ago today, is it going to make any difference with the drought or will it help the groundwater situation?
Well, it's always better to have rain than not rain.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So, but it takes far more than one active monsoon season to really have a lasting impact on drought or groundwater. So we're grateful for what we have, but it's when you think back just 12 months ago to the total lack of a monsoon we have, we would need a number of years like this in order to really start to feel like the drought might be turning. So we're still very deep into it.
What do you think, Dylan?
Well, you know, we're what, basically a quarter century, 26 years, I think, of, formal declaration of a drought.
At least 2020. I mean, it's over 20 years. Some could say it's less than 26, but
yeah,
no,
we've had a couple decent monsoon seasons.
Right,
a few thunderstorms here and there.
Sure.
So it hasn't been like, completely arid like it was last year. But as far as the entire state and the situation we're facing, that's a very long-term challenge. And, a couple of raindrops isn't going to, that's not going to be the big fix. But, looking at our water supply here in Tucson, we've talked about this a couple of times over the past couple of years. What sort of, is crisis the right word for what we're looking at? I mean, you see those photos of Lake Mead and, it's down just astoundingly. And that's where so much of our water comes from. It's not coming from, clouds that are over Tucson. It's coming from, basically flowing down from the Rocky Mountains.
That's a good point. Crisis is certainly not the word I would use, but it's certainly a word that I can understand people being very alarmed by the water level in Lake Mead, which is where most of our water supply comes from. And then when you look at being an extreme or an exceptional drought, I don't care what word you use, it doesn't sound good.
Yeah, big drought.
And if we weren't as prepared as a community as we've been, and if it weren't for the investments over many decades, then we could very well have been in a crisis. But because of the way we manage our water supply and using our local aquifers to store and manage our water, and the fact that we've been taking advantage of all the water supplies that we've been able to take off the Colorado River, not just to meet our past demands, but to store for the future. We definitely have some breathing room in Tucson, but a lot of work left to do.
When you look at this, taking one of the out by the airport because of the contamination, taking that water offline, is it a big deal?
It's definitely a big deal. It was a major decision to make because we've still got a long-term commitment to being a participant in cleaning up the contamination in the aquifer, even though we didn't cause it. We're certainly an integral part of making sure that it doesn't harm others and that we keep it contained and getting cleaned up. It's also a big deal because it's a shift from the fact that we used to use that for drinking water, and we've done a great job with it, but the risks just keep growing. It's not like we're disinventing chemicals. More chemicals get invented every day, and we're finding more chemicals in that part of the aquifer. So it's a protection of public health. From a water supply standpoint, it meets about 8% of our annual supply. So that's a hit that we're making up in other ways.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's really, that's an area where we used to pump groundwater, and we're actually shifting it to other areas. So we're able to withstand it. But it is a big deal.
Do we need to make any, build new wells to pump, or are the other ones able to sort of fill that need?
Right now, we've got enough to meet what current demands look like, but we're every year Tucson Water drills about 6 to 8 new wells. And whether that's to replace wells impacted by contamination or because, you know, we've been around over 100 years, you know, you've got wells that start to be degraded or start to fail. So we have an active well drilling program, and so far we've been able to keep up, but we've got a long way to go.
I had not heard that. I didn't know about the active drilling program. We had General Ted Maxwell with us in studio yesterday, and you know, he served for many years as the head of the Arizona Air National Guard out of Tucson, and he was telling me that this issue with the contaminants is so prevalent throughout the United States that getting money to kind of fix the problem here in Tucson, it's going to be a big challenge.
We're certainly competing with other communities. And on the one hand, the fact that we've been so proactive and we've been protecting public health and we're not serving contaminated water to our customers, that's great for the community, but it can move you down the priority scale, if you will. But what we have going for us in Tucson is the fact that we've spent so much money of our own money. We've got about $50 million that we've expended. So it's not like we're sitting back waiting for somebody else to fix the issue. All of our groundwater is considered drinking water. So we have what we call a sole source aquifer. Even though we import water from the Colorado River, all of that goes through our groundwater, our local aquifer. So that puts us in a uniquely vulnerable standpoint. And the fact that other than maybe today and a few days along the way, the Santa Cruz River, the water that comes into Tucson doesn't necessarily leave Tucson. What happens here does stay here in the groundwater. And that makes us, again, vulnerable. So we definitely have a need. We definitely have advocates for us. Our local congressional delegation and both senators are working hard to make sure that Tucson's on the list to get funding.
All right, why don't we pause right here, because I want to go in still to come with Tim Tomier, the interim city manager for the city of Tucson, still to come the very controversial city of Tucson Water differential water rate increase that is coming down the pike. And also I want to talk to him about perhaps mandatory COVID vaccine shots for City of Tucson employees. Those are a couple of items I want to get into. And I know Dylan Smith, he's got some things on his agenda also for Tim. But we'll take the break right here. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. We'll be right back.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. It is our Friday Focus interview today, and joining me in studio, Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com, and Tim Tomier is here from the city of Tucson, where he is the interim assistant city manager. We've been talking about water issues, and while we're on the water issue, and before we get into the Tucson water differential rate increase, Dylan, you brought this up during the break. This kind of rain we're having is really kind of degrading an already bad situation with the potholes.
Yeah, you know, we all sort of, you know, celebrate when we get some decent rain during the monsoon, but there are some challenges, and beyond the immediate, life safety issues with people who end up, accidentally or sometimes foolishly getting caught in the water. What happens to our roads when all of these, just enormous amount of water hits them?
The people who don't celebrate the rains are our street maintenance crew and Tucson Fire. Also, you mentioned the immediate impacts. Just last night, we had 11 swift water rescues.
Really?
Plus 2 dogs and 2 cats. So Tucson Fire was out, pretty busy night for them. But our roads and street maintenance teams under our Department of Transportation and Mobility, first of all, securing the crossings to make sure that people at least are forewarned that you shouldn't go through, even though some choose to ignore that. But the gradual erosion of the road surface itself, both, you know, with the water flowing in the road, because that's how we manage stormwater a lot in the city, and then the edges of the road when it's running along that roadway, it really does tear up our asphalt and our roadways, and just adds to the deferred maintenance that we have, and adds dollars to the program that we're going to need to really bring Tucson's transportation network back up to speed.
When you look at southwestern cities, El Paso, Las Vegas, where I've lived and worked, Phoenix, where I've lived and worked, and of course Tucson, it's always the street is the storm drain. These traditionally southwestern cities, you just didn't put any storm drains in. Is that changing?
It is actually changing. You mentioned El Paso. El Paso actually a few years ago created a stormwater utility. Where they actually people pay into it as a utility, like your water, your wastewater,
right,
in order to fund the investments and upgrades, not just to repair the storm drains, but also build new capacity. Here in Tucson, We've taken a pretty significant step in that direction with our green stormwater infrastructure. That is a new fee that was added about a year and a half ago to residents in the city, and it's being used to fund what we call green stormwater infrastructure. So in order to protect the roads, but also manage the water and try to recharge our aquifer, we build like swales and retention basins with vegetation in them to slow the water down and get it off the road where we can, and then try to use it to increase our tree canopy, but also replenish our water supply. So it's a relatively new program, but as we build more and more of that infrastructure, it's really going to have a big impact.
Okay, the big gorilla in the room is this differential water rates for City of Tucson, and the county, from what I understand, is preparing to take legal action against the city. Do you think that this move with the differential water rates would stand up legally? Let me ask you that, Tim.
So certainly the ability for Tucson to charge a differential water rate will stand up legally. The policy basis for it is pretty clear, and the mechanics by which the city went through the process definitely meets the spirit and intent and the actual facts of doing differential water rates. What I'm hopeful will occur over the next few months is one of the things the council directed staff to do was do a cost of service analysis, not as the basis for the rate because the rate's already been decided, but as an additional set of information. And we've the county had asked to be involved in that process. We've actually invited them to the table. And so when they actually go through the detailed analysis, I believe they'll be able to see that it's not only a legitimate differential water rate is a legitimate policy decision, but it also does have some cost basis behind it.
Dylan? Looking at where people are in the city, aren't there cost differentials based on where people are? You know, some places you have to pump water quite a bit uphill. Other places it's not such a big deal. Why not sort of extend that to everybody?
So historically, that's how the rates have been for the most part, where everybody receives kind of a similar rate. And sure, everywhere you go in the city or in the community, there's a different chemistry of cost that goes into it. Where a cost of service analysis goes beyond that, and instead of just looking at the pumps, the pipes, the infrastructure, and the energy, it also looks at the relationship between owners and non-owners of a utility. And that's where a fair amount of the cost differential could come from. And that is, you know, running an analysis right by the book, that ownership, non-ownership carries different sets of risks. It also carries different sets of investment and cost. And that will serve as a fair amount of basis for the cost differential.
You know, I live uphill, so I really don't want to see my water rate go up. But, you know, I have to ask the question.
Sure. And actually, the way we deliver water now, virtually all the water we serve, or the majority of it, goes up and over the Tucson Mountains anyway. So no matter if you're uphill or downhill, we've already pumped that water.
It's coming
water
from Maverick Valley.
That's correct.
I was just going to say, the county is going to contend when they do hit you with legal action, from what I understand, that there is this historic precedent that goes, an agreement that goes back, I've heard, to 1970 between the city and county to deliver the water to people in the unincorporated areas at the same rates as the city.
To my knowledge, there's no agreement along those lines. There are certainly a lot of agreements between the city and the county, and a lot of those agreements on water and wastewater service are very explicit about what the city is supposed to do, is required to do, and is allowed to do, and vice versa with the county. And there's a memoranda that were created in about 2007, because even absent differential rates, there's always a reason to have a conversation about water. And some of these assertions have been well investigated even prior to now.
Do you have anything more on that issue, or can I move on?
Go ahead.
All right. I want to talk about the COVID vaccine. We had the supervisor's chair, Sharon Bronson, with me on the show this week. She's all in on mandatory vaccinations for all Pima County employees. It wouldn't surprise me that when this comes up before the Board of Supervisors in mid-August, that there are the votes for it, that there will be four votes. I'm just wondering, is there a conversation going on with you and your associates at the cabinet level at the city to consider something similar?
It's been an ongoing topic of discussion of how to maximize the amount of vaccination we have with city employees. To date, it's all been under voluntary and strong encouragement in order to really hope and encourage employees to do the right thing, which in our view is to get vaccinated. And there are even some soft carrots or sticks in the form of if you're a city employee and you want to engage in travel and training on city business, you have to show proof of vaccination. Where we differ a little bit, perhaps, is that there are certainly some legitimate health reasons and perhaps even some legitimate religious reasons why individuals may be resistant, or it might not even be in their best interest to get a vaccine. So we actually are really, really working one-on-one with people and employees when they're have such a circumstance to do the right thing for their individual and for the community. So I don't see a mandate in the near term, but that could turn on a dime.
What is your assessment? How much data do you have on, you know, the percentage of city employees who have been vaccinated?
We actually have some fairly decent data. I don't have it in front of me right now to know the percentage because it is a balance between operating an entity and knowing that the health and vaccination status, but also the personal information sharing. But we did operate one of the major vaccine pods or points of delivery at the TCC. So we have a pretty good idea of how many times, you know, city employees came through. So we have a fairly high percentage of vaccination within city staff. And some departments are in the 90 percentile. But I don't have any details beyond that, but we have a rough estimate.
You think it's maybe your guess, maybe around 70%?
It wouldn't surprise me if City of Tucson employees were above 70%. I think that's a fair assumption.
And Dylan, what are we in Pima County? Now, well, if you take the total, this gets a little confusing, I know, but if you take the total population, how many what percentage is totally vaccinated? Half?
We're getting up, well, totally vaccinated and, you know, partly vaccinated. Those figures are still, quite a bit apart. You know, we're above half for fully vaccinated. And then, there are people who seemingly went and got one shot and then never went back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's the 2 or 3 weeks in there where it's kind of, you know, a slowly increasing number where if you get your one shot and then you wait the 2 weeks, then you go get the next one. But we have to remember that kids under 12 are not being vaccinated right now, and they're, you know, a healthy chunk of the population. Well, hopefully they're remaining a healthy chunk of the population.
I hope so.
And so, you know, if you look at the number of adults or, you know, people 12 and over, those who are eligible, you know, that figure increases a little bit, but we're still, you know, really nowhere near where we need to be to, you know, put a damper on things. Right now, the pandemic is running just as rampant as it was back when, you know, everyone was pretty scared about it, you know, in December and January. Mm-hmm. The people who are unvaccinated are getting sick at that same rate. They're, you know, somewhat smaller numbers because so many people have gotten vaccinated, but it's still dangerous. There are, you know, a small number of people who have been vaccinated who are still getting not just ill, but seriously ill. There are kids getting seriously ill.
Right.
We are unfortunately not done yet.
Oh, that's for sure. While we have you here, Tim Tomier, you were very much instrumental in trying to mediate this controversy over at the Reed Park Zoo. The zoo had their expansion plans, and then there was the very vocal group that wanted the duck pond saved and preserved. So we've reached a compromise, is that correct?
We've reached a decision.
Okay.
Whether or not you could call it a compromise.
A decision to kind of move forward and hopefully maybe a similar direction?
That's correct. So Mayor and Council on May 4th did take all the community input. So they paused the project in January.
Right.
And we did a very intensive public engagement process, including a stakeholder group. And on May 4th, they gave direction. Now, some of the key highlights of that direction is that there will be a zoo expansion.
Mm-hmm.
It will not be in the area of the Barnum Hill and the South Duck Pond. So okay. if you look at it from a very basic level, that's a compromise.
Right.
Now, the details of that, they gave a general geography and they gave some goals, which are preserve as much green space as possible. They set a kind of a financial limit, and they also asked to take animal welfare into concern or animal welfare concerns into consideration. So what we have right now is one to two layouts that city staff feel meet all those criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been in discussions one-on-one with each council member to make sure that that really meets their spirit and intent. And then we had a meeting on the 10th with some of the stakeholders. I came out alive and mostly intact. And so what we do, I feel like we're very close to having a pretty well locked in path forward. Mm-hmm. Got a little bit more work to do. And certainly at the end of the day, I don't think we'll have 100%, you know, everybody completely agreement. But I think we've done some significant things, which is we'll be able to deliver on the promises made to the community, but we also are preserving the South Duck Pond and Barnum Hill, and also have taken into account some input from the public that may have not been in the prior thinking and may have not, it may have played out differently than it will moving forward with valuing the park user experience just as much as the zoo user experience. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, we'll look back and think a really good thing occurred here, but mm-hmm. but that last 5% is
getting
the tough part.
Getting the ball over the goal line, that is always a difficult proposition. But would you think that the long-awaited zoo expansion, and by many people in the community hopeful, will be happening in 3 years, something like that? Is that kind of, I'm just throwing that number out
sure.
there. Does that seem reasonable?
That's very reasonable.
Okay.
If my crystal ball is correct, by mid-August,
okay.
we will know the path we're going down and we'll be initiating the redesign.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there's elements of the Reed Park Zoo master plan includes things beyond just that expansion area.
The footprint, yeah.
So we've done the front entryway, mm-hmm. we've done, you know, the new flamingo habitat, mm-hmm. but there's also an element called the world of play,
right.
which includes an ambassador building where people can interact with animals, and also uh-huh. it'll be a benefit for children visiting the zoo.
Right.
That's been stalled as well. So my goal,
uh-huh.
And I think it's a shared goal, are to move forward confidently with the redesign, but mm-hmm. also move that project forward.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be maybe coming online within a year or two.
Yeah.
And then the zoo expansion is within 2 to 3 years. I think that's a safe okay. timeline to look at.
Go ahead, Dylan.
I've got a question about something that kind of flew under the radar this year, and SunTran contracts, you know, both with the vendor, you know, the private operator of SunTran who handles that, and the Teamsters and everything in previous go-rounds has been, you know, just a complete drama with threats of strikes and, you know, maybe we need to, you know, get rid of this company, find somebody else, et cetera, et cetera. This just kind of happened this year very quietly. And what was the difference?
So it wasn't 100% drama free because Mr. Ortega was just about to leave on a vacation and we had to do a little bit of last minute configuring to get to the deal, which, it just made for an exciting weekend.
When was that?
Pardon?
When was that?
That was 2 weekends ago.
Oh, okay. So it's very current.
It's very current.
Okay.
So the difference, I think, was twofold. One is, I think the city and the Teamsters Union and the management company in the middle, we had some pretty good alignment on what a deal should look like. And part of what made that an easier conversation to have is that it would come with salary adjustments. We needed to adjust salaries on the entry level to meet market so we can attract drivers into the industry. We also needed to retain better the folks that had the 5-10 years worth of experience. And so we knew there was money available to accomplish that. So those broad parameters were not arguing about, are we going to get money or not? It was about, how much is that money? And we just had a general, like a small range within which that was being negotiated, and then how do we distribute it to meet those outcomes of attraction and retention of drivers? So that makes for a less dramatic conversation when you're not scratching and clawing if you're the union for something when there's nothing available. And the fact that the mayor and council had just approved the market rate salary adjustments for city employees really created an environment where we knew what the end zone looked like, and we knew it was a win-win.
What is the deal for how many years?
If I have it correct, I believe it's a 5-year deal. Wow. And actually it includes some near-term market adjustments. It includes known salary adjustments for years 2 and 3, and then a reopener for years 4 and 5.
Okay, Dylan, this always happens, doesn't it? I'm out of time, been out of time, but you know what I'm going to say. I've got one more question. It's my show, so we'll do another one. So with the SunTran agreement, is it possible to continue a free ride policy on the buses?
We are.
And do other cities do that?
I don't actually know the answer to the second question.
All right.
I worry about us.
All right.
We have no fare box through the end of the calendar year.
No fare box, free ride.
And is it possible that it could go further than that? I'd say it's very possible. Mm-hmm. So we're still a community that's in recovery. And have we even gotten out of the pandemic? No. But we also have an economy that's been reengaged. And to the extent that the transit network can support that and support what our community needs. So our manager, our mayor are very interested in how do we continue to serve that community and the no fare box approach has shown some benefits, and can we afford it long term? That's a big weighty question. But how long can we afford to do it and still keep it free? We might have even some more time past December.
And people paying bus fare has been a fairly small slice of the whole SunTran budget.
Right, that's correct. The fare box revenue doesn't cover the bills.
17% to 20%, something like that.
Yeah,
that's
a good guess. Yeah.
All right, Tim Tomier, thank you very much. Say hello to your lovely wife and your wonderful cat, the black cat Jack the cat, who seems to be weathering the storms pretty well.
He's calming us down. It's actually been a flip in roles there.
Uh huh. Well, I know while you were working at home, Jack was very happy to have you at home and in the office. So now that you're going in, is he having some withdrawal?
He is. He does give me some stern looks on occasion.
Daddy's going to work. He'll pay for this when he gets home.
That's right. Talk to the paw.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take our break right here. I'll have a very shortened segment with Dylan, but maybe we can get some good information in a couple of minutes.
We'll talk right back.
Yeah, Buckmaster on a Friday.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehops.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bonvoyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Friday edition. Dylan Smith is here, the editor, publisher, founder of TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, why should the legislature be exempt from the open meeting law? You know all about the open meeting law and all that stuff as president of the Arizona Press Club.
Why should they be?
Yeah, no, the legislature says it's exempt from the open meeting law, and I'm asking you, why should they be exempt? Why do they think they should be exempt?
Well, they want to be able to, do the people's business behind
closed doors,
not let anybody know what's actually going on. That's
why
what they want.
Is that legal?
Well, I would have the opinion that it's not. I mean, Arizona, at least in theory, in writing, has a very good set of what we call sunshine laws about open government, open meetings, public records being available. Of course, in practice, that's not as bright and sunny always as it should be. But the principle is that it's the right of citizens to know what the people that we hire to make some decisions on our behalf
and elect to make those decisions.
When we hire them.
They are our
employees. Yeah. They work for us, and we should be able to, run some quality control on what they're doing, give them their performance review, which requires us knowing what they're doing, which is why, we have reporters like you and me paying attention to try and, give people kind of an independent assessment of what government's doing. Our elected officials, our staff, bureaucrats, all of them.
All right, Dylan, I see a couple of stories emerging here. Obviously, COVID-19, the reemergence, is a big story.
Well, and that's not really a reemergence. It hasn't gone
away.
As
you pointed out during the interview, it's every bit as of a concern as it was at the height of the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not for everyone who is vaccinated and still being smart about what they're doing.
Right. Many people wearing masks now back into the supermarket.
Yeah. If you're being, if you're vaccinated and being responsible and wearing a mask when you are, around groups of people and, washing your hands and, behaving somewhat responsibly, does it need to be something that you panic about right now? No. You should just remain concerned. If you're not vaccinated, whether by choice or because you have health issues, or if you're not old enough and you're going to be a little kid going back to school, you should be kind of worried still.
All right. Paul Ingram, one of your reporters, Paul does a great job, and he reported on the Banner Health will require hospital staff to get COVID shots by November. Dylan, I believe a real important date to watch with this whole vaccine issue will be probably September, when the federal government will make provisional designation, permanent designation on COVID-19. Yeah. You will then see Banner and others feeling even more comfortable about requiring staff members to take a mandatory shot. Certainly the military will follow and make it mandatory after that designation.
When the FDA, puts the stamp of approval on these vaccines,
and
we're no longer operating under what they call the emergency use authorization,
yeah,
and they are fully, officially, formally, completely authorized. I expect the military to move very quickly to require people to be vaccinated. Healthcare providers. We've already seen around the country a number of healthcare providers mandate it now, not waiting for that.
And we've seen
Houston
universities moving that way. Indiana University was kind of at the forefront in that, and that went to the courts. And I think the courts sided with Indiana, saying you can require a mandatory vaccination of all students.
And a lot of the restrictions we've seen around the country against requiring vaccines are kind of rooted in the fact that they are not, every last piece of paper at the FDA has not been signed off on yet. And once that is done, some of those legal arguments sort of collapse.
All right, Dylan, I've got to run. Any two-for-one agreement or deals going over at TucsonSentinel.com? If someone donates, does the money go a little bit,
Well, right now we don't have a matching campaign. Except for a long-term one that's pretty much going all year to support our Report from America Corps member, who's our reporter, Benito El Kelty, who's our idea reporter, we call him. And Report for America is funding part of his salary, and basically this community needs to fund the other part. So in a way that is a match. And, if you donate to TucsonSentinel.com, we can keep doing the watchdog work that we are doing.
All right. Keep it up, Dylan.
Thank you
very much for coming into the studio today. We're going to take our break right here. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. Always fun. His top three picks for the weekend. That is Waiting in the Wings on Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD. MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCare2UAZ.com.
Here we go, Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Time to start your planning. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. What a nice time of year, not only in Tucson, but it's really green over in the Gila National Wilderness. Temperatures are in the 70s in Silver City. Nighttime lows are in the 50s. Can't beat that. Start your planning now, then do it. Only a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch, award-winning Tucson publicist, Inside Tucson Business / Tucson Weekly food and beverage columnist, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how are you? Enjoying the rain, my friend?
I am getting ready to celebrate another wet weekend. Absolutely wonderful in its wetness, indeed.
Hey, is the summer road trip still on over at the Fisher?
Yeah, it sure is. Kingfisher's annual summer road trip where, they kind of celebrate the culinary traditions of various regions across the country. But today, Bill, is the last day to enjoy their salute to the Great Plains and Midwest. So if your doctor has told you that you need to get more fried smelt and bratwurst and walleye in your diet, Kingfisher is the place to be tonight for a roundup of the best of the Midwest. You're also going to see some Great Plains-inspired drinks and desserts, but it ends tonight so they can prepare to roll out their back east menu next week. It's Midwest or bust tonight at Kingfisher.
Foodies are loving what's going on at the Loft.
For sure. And, you know, the memory of the late food and travel journalist Anthony Bourdain is actually going to be taking center stage at the Loft later today and tomorrow for a special screening of the new documentary Roadrunner, which chronicles the really all-too-short life of this foodie legend. And to make the moment a little bit more special with the kinds of street cuisine that Anthony loved, local food trucks are going to be on hand to dish out their own deliciousness. The trucks are going to start serving food at 4 p.m. today and tomorrow with the film showings at 4:15 and 7. I think it's a great way to learn about this culinary and cultural icon and to enjoy some globally inspired cuisine this weekend at the Loft.
And quickly over at Zona 78...
Yeah, in the world of food and beverage commemoratives, there seems to be a day for everything, but Sunday, July 25th is National Wine and Cheese Day. Check out what Zona 78 on Tancredi has planned. They're waiving their corkage fee for all retail wine purchases, and you're going to be also getting happy hour pricing all day long on their cheese and meat platters. Zona 78 on Sunday. Happy National Wine and Cheese Day. I'm all a quiver.
I'm all in. Have a great weekend. Stay dry, Mr. Matt Russell. Thank you.
Cheers, Bill.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for the content of our program. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy yourselves.